Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hey, this is Sean Levitt, the founder CEO of Macklin's Inclusive Leadership Group. And you know, with that, we try to approach our customers in a holistic way, helping leaders and organizations build and sustain inclusive cultures. So we focus on engagement, productivity, innovation, customer experience, and of course, you know, the bottom line.
That's awesome, Sean. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ivy Podcast today. Before we dive a little bit deeper around, you know, all the things we want to talk about your company and other things that are going on in the market, tell us a little bit about your backgrounds, your kind of thumbnail version of your career timeline.
Yeah, I like to start at the age of 18 because it demonstrates kind of the path that I've taken. John, in 18, I was going to community college and I had my first leadership responsibility, which was a night manager at a beer distributorship. So I had a diverse crew and, you know, our responsibility was to load, you know, 10 to 12 trucks from 4 to 2 a.m. in the morning. And from there, 3 years later, I was a resident assistant and president of my fraternity at a private liberal arts expensive college. So I went from a dingy warehouse to a prestige college by mere chance. After that, I then became a banker. So I worked for a large regional bank. I managed branches. And over the years, I've had a combination of working in the business and leading teams that are focused on, you know, customer experience, managing profit and loss, and also focused on human resource development. So organization development, leadership development, and diversity, equity, and inclusion. So I've consulted to CEOs, and I've also helped supervisors at the front line find new ways to lead effectively, and to engage their team to increase their performance.
Oh, that's super exciting. And I can't stress enough the importance of that, especially in the current market conditions, not only with everyone shifting to a remote workforce, but now a lot of companies working towards that. Whatever the future of work is, or whatever the configurations are, whether that's hybrid model or a lot of companies announcing going back, pretty sure those are some of the tough decisions for executives. So with that said, what are some of the trends or insights that or ideas that you're very excited about these days? What do you think is the next big trend? What are you currently researching, or perhaps what are you looking to invest in?
Well, what is near and dear to me is the focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I created my company and I wanted to name it Inclusive Leadership because I think leadership development is important. And there are some organizations that need leadership development and organizational development. And there are some organizations, especially today, that are focused more on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so what I like to do is integrate those. So I'm always doing DE&I work and I'm always doing leadership and organizational development work. So what's exciting for me is to see the continuous focus on ESG or CSR. So the corporate social responsibility. You know, what's happening now, our investors are demanding that corporations be more responsible. And with environmental, social, governance, you know, they're really demanding that companies show up differently and they show up with a purpose. So there was, a few years back, Larry Fink at BlackRock, which is the largest asset manager. I think they manage around $8 trillion. He came out with a letter, and he constantly comes out with annual letters that demanding that corporations do better. And what I find is from that focus on ESG is it starts to influence what happens inside the organizations. I think that's why the focus on inclusive cultures, on diversity, equity, inclusion is getting more attention. You have CEOs like Tim Ryan at PwC that along with some others created the CEO Action Group, which I don't know, might have 1,000 leaders involved right now, but that really is focused on how you create environments that where you can have more courageous conversations focused around diversity and, you know, check our unconscious biases and share best practices so that the internal companies, the internal cultures support what's happening externally. So that's what I research every day is, you know, how do corporations and organizations get better? And I think the key is to have an engaged group of employees that are being led by leaders that have a growth mindset and a coaching mentality so that they can create that partnership and collaboration, which I then think leads to greater idea generation, innovation, and productivity, products, services, so that the client has a better experience or customer has a better experience at the end of all of that. So I don't know if everybody else would say that's exciting for them, but that's what's exciting for me. And you mentioned investing. You know, I saw a figure recently that 85% of all investors want to invest in stocks that are focused on sustainability. 95% of millennials believe that or want to invest in companies like that. So that's what's happening right now. I think it's an important trend, and I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon.
As you work with a lot of executives, whether, you know, in a coaching capacity or other engagements and other projects, seems like, you know, that's your sweet spot in terms of helping them, or any from your previous engagement strategies that really lead to innovative cultures that foster that environment. Share with us your thoughts on that. What are some of the things that worked well for you, or maybe something that you had learned from?
Yeah, I think it. I look at it in two different ways. One, there's structures, and then there's behavior. And so I think you have to focus on the structures. You know, structures could be reporting structures. You know, what's the hierarchy look like? What's bureaucracy look like? How accessible are leaders at multiple levels of the organizations? I think you have to look at technology. You know, and how are you using those that technology? So, for example, you know, I use Zoom as my platform for meetings and for learning. And you know, there's a lot of opportunity to generate some ideas through the chat box, through polling. So you've got to have the structures in place. I think you also have some tools. So I remember back, John, in early 2000s, I was leading innovation workshops. And one of my favorite tools was the Six Hats of Balanced Thinking by Edward de Bono. And what I love about that is it provided me and leaders in the organization a framework to really think in multiple ways. And I think we have to provide them with some frameworks like that. And then behaviorally, I think leaders have to show up with some competencies that are focused on having a bold vision. They have to have courage. They have to value diversity, equity, and inclusion. So they have to be able to see that there are differences and create an environment where those differences can really be leveraged. So we're getting a rich mix of perspectives and ideas. And finally, I think they have to be, you know, vulnerable, curious, and at times follow where their teams are wanting them to go.
What are some of the most common misconceptions or things that are not as widely as adopted when it comes to inclusive leadership? What are some of the things that you coach, that you teach, as you partner with some of your clients that are not, you know, that are not so much mainstream? Some of the things that we know in conceptually we understand it, but some of the things that you can share with us that are not necessarily as widely as, you know, available.
Yeah, well, your audience may not be able to see me. They may, but what's closest to my heart is that white men do have a role to play in diversity, equity, and inclusion. So we don't all, you know, identify as a white guy, and I have a role to play in leading this work. And there are oftentimes white men don't feel like they belong in this work. They don't feel like they have a voice in this work. And quite honestly, I don't think we make the progress that we need to make unless white men are involved. And we are seeing more and more CEOs who are white men. And quite honestly, I don't know, it's 66% of the C-suite, or it's still made up of white men. So if we can't get 66% of the most important leaders that have decision-making power involved in this work, then we're just going to have limited success. So as I mentioned with Tim Ryan and PwC and the CEO Action Group, that's a big effort. I think what we've been noticing over the last 12 months, or at least beginning with in May with the murder of George Floyd, is that more and more companies are putting out statements, they're putting out commitments. And John, most of those companies are led by white guys. Most of those companies probably have a corporate communications person that's helping with that, and investor relations folks that are white people. Most of them probably have chief diversity, equity, and inclusion officers that identify as either Black or people of color that are, I think, holding the responsibility and oftentimes too much of the burden. I think it's time for us to see that this is, we've got to be inclusive in this work. And I mean, men have to step into it. White men in particular have to step into this so that we can identify what our roles and responsibilities are and show up and support each other and make sure that we're co-creating solutions that work for as many people as possible.
Very interesting. Thanks for the for those insights. When it comes to future of work, what does that look like to you? What are some of the concepts or some of the trends that you're seeing that are shaping the, you know, the modern workforce? What do you see coming up in the next, you know, period of time?
Yeah, I think, like, you know, in general, most people would say, you know, the continuous focus on technology and continuous focus on the customer client experience, you know, using the digital platforms to ensure that consumers today and in the future have easy access. They have a powerful experience. They can do things, you know, from their phone, or heck knows what it'll be in the future. It'll probably be smaller than a phone. I think beyond that, I think the future, you have to look at the demographics. My kids are 20. When my kids are my age, the workforce will be 51% white. So the demographics are demanding, you know, racial and ethnic demographics are going to be dramatically different. I think we'll continue to see the power that women play in our labor force. They'll continue to increase their responsibilities of leadership. John, I also think we'll see some additional underrepresented or marginal groups, such as the members of the LGBTQ community, those focus around abilities. So neurodiversity is going to continue to be important, and physical ability will also be important. So we're going to see diversity increase. So people will continue to grab onto their voices. My hope is that we'll see greater allyship, and leaders need to learn how to create inclusive cultures. They need to have a global mindset to know that this world is connected all over the place. They need to be adaptive. They need to recognize that 70% of the development is happening on the job, and they need to be coaches so that they can really pull the fullest potential out of their employees. And finally, I think they need to continue to focus on purpose and meaning. I think that's the future of the workforce. It's where people want to go, and they feel like they belong. They feel like they're contributing to something meaningful. They can make a good living, and they're kind of impacting the community around them, which might be local or it might be the global community.
When it comes to talent acquisition, whether that's, you know, surrounding yourself with a type of personalities, it's a top of the mind for a lot of executives, whether actively recruiting or not. What are some of your recommendations when it comes to, you know, not only hiring, but retaining the top talent on your teams, especially given the current market conditions where the war for talent out there is real?
oh, is it real? And it's certainly real, again, because we have this heightened focus on diversity. So that makes it even more challenging when you have a smaller pool of high talent and you want to go and grab them. You know, what I hope your audience is hearing from me is I'm trying to step outside of the traditional things that you might hear around leadership and, you know, talent and competencies and things like that. I believe that we'll need to continue to see leaders show up as being authentic. They need to have a high emotional intelligence, which means that they have that self-awareness of how they show up and how they behave and how their actions impact others. So they got to be able to understand the experiences of others. So, you know, just like CEOs are showing up today, they realize that there are experiences that are happening around the pandemic that have differential impact on their employees. As we know, there's a disproportionate impact of the pandemic on people of color and on women. I think the number is 2 million, almost 2 million women have left the workforce. So that emotional intelligence helps leaders recognize that, you know, life is not just how they see it, that they have to be paying attention to the experiences of other. Through that process, I think if they can stay humble and curious and recognize that there is potential in everyone, then I think they'll get more out of their employees than they might be getting today. So I think it's that can help attract and retain. But I go back to, you know, that focus on ESG and CSR, that corporate social responsibility. You know, the millennials and the Gen Zs, they want to work for companies that care about them. And they want to work for companies that the external story matches the internal experience. So you can attract them by that external story. I mean, some companies can have a great brand story. They can sell it to potential employees. But once they get in, that experience has to match it. There's got to be the alignment. And if they don't, they're going to leave. You know, when I was brought up in corporations, you know, my first company, I was there for 15 years. I had this bias or mentality or training, I guess, that you just stay with the company for the rest of your life. Well, we know that's not true today. And we know that that doesn't penalize anyone. So people come in, they experience it. If you want to retain them, then you've got to see them. And you've got to create an inclusive environment where they feel like they belong, they matter, their contributions connect to the objectives of the business, and that you're constantly challenging them to do better and to provide them some support. I think coaching is one of those big things.
When it comes to coaching executives, when specifically around interviews and, you know, spotting the right talent and asking the right questions or whatever the case may be, facilitating effective interviews. Because at the executive level, when the candidate gets in front of them, they've gone through multiple rounds, technical assessments, and so forth. So it really becomes a completely different dynamic when it comes to that specific conversation. What are your recommendations there in terms of executives really facilitating effective interviews that lead to very good and sound decisions?
Well, I think it's, you know, I'd challenge them to check their biases. You know, I think still too often we're hiring for cultural fit. And I think the smart CEOs that are focused on innovation and driving, you know, a different experience for their end customer, I think they recognize that they've got to have diversity on their team. And I don't necessarily mean racial and ethnic or gender diversity, but even thought diversity. So I think they got to check their biases around, you know, what fit looks like, and be open to introducing a new person to the team that can add some of that diversity. Now, I did mention the thought diversity. I do think that if we're going to see a difference of changing the complexion and kind of the gender diversity at the higher levels, I think they have to recognize the value that comes with people living a different experience, you know, by race, ethnicity, or gender. So I think they have to be open to how that can contribute to the way that their team approaches problems and makes decisions, not only for their employees, but, you know, for their clients and for their customers.
Right. So With the line of work you're in, I'm pretty sure your content diet is very diverse. And curious, can you share with us the resources that you utilize to stay up to date for learning self-actualization or even for fun? Share with us what's in your bookmarks. What are the different sources of information that you surround yourself with?
Yeah, well, I think it's a kind of a contrast. You know, I try to start my day with the Insight Timer, which is a meditation app. So you talk about self-actualization. That's the beginning of it, because I think there is a certain part of unlearning and to being present and to being open to what you're going to experience that day. And then, John, I jump into this craziness that's called social media. I use it to curate content. So, you know, I go to LinkedIn, I go to Twitter, I go to Google News. I go to Facebook. I'll get my news that way. And I do follow a diverse range of influencers. So I do like to get perspectives from, difference of race, gender, sexual orientation, gender identity, ability, age, even political persuasion. And that just bombards me on Twitter, and it keeps me connected to what's going on and how people are seeing things differently. Especially in COVID, we're not gathering with a diverse group of people. So we're not getting, we don't have that proximity. So Twitter allows me to hear the voices of many different people. And that could be from Brené Brown or Adam Grant on one end to, you know, a 19-year-old woman who has autism. So I get to experience that every single day. Now, it can be overwhelming, as I'm sure you can attest to. So that's how I get my content. And, you know, I feel a little embarrassed, but I do like to spend some time on Facebook and on TikTok. Now, my kids tease me because I actually use Instagram Reels, which then moves into TikTok. One of the reasons I do that, John, is that it keeps me connected to what's going on generationally. So Facebook, I get to see, you know, how people are showing up, maybe that are close to my age. TikTok, I get to see what's going on with my kids' generation. And I think all of that is important for me to have an understanding how people are living their lives, what motivates them, what satisfies them, so that I can be a better consultant and coach and facilitator when I'm trying to help my clients create the most inclusive, diverse, and equitable work environment or organization.
I can relate definitely on the Twitter side with you, because it really also lets me create my own little bubble that, yes. You know, I'm personally big, you know, venture capital, angel investing, fundraising. For me, that's space I operate in, space I'm very interested in. And that really lets me create almost that controlled environment where I am surrounded only by that type of information. And that's, you know, I can definitely relate on that with you on many levels. And when it comes to books, is there a book that you always recommend to others, and why is that? Share with us anything that really stands out to you these days.
Yeah, there's, I don't know if I'm one of those readers where I've got probably 12 books and it's got a mark, and it could be quarter through, halfway through, three quarters through. So I jump back and forth. I'll just tell you what I'm reading today, or I'm revisiting. So one is 400 Souls, which is a great book about the history of Black Americans. So I think that helps me, and I think helps other understand the systemic racism and the experience. And I think that's relevant today as we continue to deal with inequity and injustice. And I've also picked up a book that I've had for many years called Coaching for Performance by Sir John Whitmore. And it is about leaders as coaches. And I think for me, it's a great way for leaders to shift their mindset. You know, we've been taught as leaders to tell and to guide and to know the answers and be in charge. And what I love about this approach to coaching is it shifts the mindset to, I am here to facilitate your learning, your awareness building, and your responsibility. And it uses inquiry and listening. And I, you know, when I've taught this in the past, I tell leaders, you know, it could be a capital C, which is a more formal coaching session where you have 30 minutes to an hour, or it can be a lowercase C, which, you know, an employee comes to you and they say, you know, I've got a problem. And instead of immediately giving them an answer, you just ask a question. You ask them what they would do. You get them thinking. What happens is they figure it out. Quite honestly, I used that a lot with my kids as they were in their teenage years. And they learned quickly how to vacuum, do dishes and all that. And I didn't have to hear from them again. So those are two books. The last thing I'll say, because I have it on my desk, is Daniel Kahneman's book, Thinking Fast and Slow. I love that book because it challenges us to really evaluate our thinking. How am I thinking? And oftentimes, I don't know what it is, 99% of the time or whatever, we're in our fast brain mode. You know, we're just responding to our environment. We're getting things done. And we oftentimes don't stop and reflect on, is that really in line with my intent? Checking in on, you know, getting feedback of if my action and my impact connected and aligned. So I think that's a great book for people to check out.
Oh, those are great recommendations. You know, I'm definitely making notes of that to my growing list of books to read, and we'll make the titles available to our listeners in the episode notes. Sean Ken, thank you enough for your time today. Very short and powerful conversation. We'll stay in touch and perhaps can do another episode in the near future.
Sounds good. Thank you, John. Thanks for what you're doing.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.